Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Love this.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I was in a mood here today. I knew I'd get a reaction from Sue on this one.
Love
too,
it.
Right? If you don't recognize it yet, Nights on Broadway, Bee Gees. And I'm telling you, if you have not watched the documentary on Max, it is outstanding.
So
really, really highly recommend it. On the topic of entertainment, we'll talk more about some TV and movie choices with Paul Hall tomorrow in the 4 o'clock hour. Jane Duker will hang out after the roundtable. Lev Cusimano talking a little football and hockey, maybe a little baseball. And Alex Gold from Kansas City will join us, and our friend Tim Summer on some music stuff tomorrow as well. I have a few little things here before Sue's news, some audio, a couple of bites I have not heard. I always like doing this. It's like, you know, roulette, right, Ethan?
A little bit.
Every once in a while. I'll sit here, so I'll see something. I saw Jennings tweet this out. He was on CNN last night. I think he came up with a new term here. He's talking about the Nazi salute thing.
Elon Musk on the Trump orbit has been really good, and his impact on the country is really good. So I don't know how this is going to turn out. I know these kinds of announcements are important to presidents. These kinds of investments are important to new administrations. But, you know, I would listen to Elon. I mean, he's obviously got some information and some opinions about this, and I don't know how much of this is going to be aired in front of and behind the scenes. But
Elon Musk keeps on overshadowing Donald Trump. I mean, you had in the inauguration, then it was the hand gesture, quote unquote, that is the subject of great mystery and debate. Yeah, the subject of great mystery and debate.
Are you talking about, you're not one of these salute truthers, are you?
No, what I'm, is that what we're calling it now? All I'm saying is,
I love it. So salute truthers, that's a good phrase from Jennings. This was kind of, I think, awesome and inspiring. And, you know, it's very interesting to see the evolution with the American people of J.D. Vance. I didn't know much about him. I knew Hillbilly Elegy, knew a little bit about him in the Senate, didn't know much about him, but really have come to appreciate what he's all about. And this was really cool to see him step into the Oval Office for the first time.
Wow. This is J.D. Vance's first time to step into the Oval Office. It's incredible.
This is incredible.
Yeah, it's Mike Johnson doing the tour there.
Good of him to think to tape it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Fred, you and I are huge baseball fans. Not that Sue isn't, Ethan as well. But I wanted to talk about the vote for Ichiro Suzuki because he fell one. Now, I know that typically, was it Rivera was the only one that was unanimous,
right? Yes, I was going to say, who held out? Do you know?
We don't
who
know.
Was the one?
Do we know?
No.
So some of these guys who vote are like, they're 85 years old, and they're baseball writers from a different era. And I don't know how anyone could look at a couple of these names that have not been unanimous, like Ken Griffey Jr., too. Well, are you kidding me? I think he was one vote. But this was awesome. And, you know, I feel bad for Ichiro, and we didn't get to know him very well in the Midwest because of Seattle and the American League. But there's a guy who poured everything, did everything he could, and never even got close to a ring, which is kind of sad. But he was an amazing player. But this is funny, too, because through a translator, you know, one vote short, what do you do about that?
I was able to receive many votes from the writers and grateful for them. But there was one writer that I wasn't able to get a vote from. I would like to invite him over to to my house, and we'll have a drink together, and we'll have a good chat. Very, very grateful to be here and thank you.
Yeah, that's class. You know, that's very classy.
In 2020, Derek Jeter missed by one vote.
Right.
Did he really?
Griffey missed out by three votes. Nolan Ryan missed out by 6 votes.
Yeah, see, that's ridiculous.
To be unanimous.
That is crazy.
Babe Ruth, by the way, only got 95% of the vote.
Some of these folks are going to be stubborn. By the way, on the classy front, I really do, you know, I think when I'm, now that I'm older, like I said to Kevin Wheeler today, who's on Camo X and he's from Detroit, I felt, even though I'm a Packers guy, I felt bad for the Lions because
yes.
the Lions were so close and their fans got so close. But the other game that was really, and I was pretty happy with this because I don't like Baltimore, but I like Mark Andrews, who is a tight end, and he dropped that last, was it the two-point conversion or was
yes.
it the touchdown?
Well, he had a fumble earlier in the game, and he dropped right. the two-point conversion that would have tied it.
And he hasn't said much since then, but he issued a statement today saying, it's impossible to adequately express how I feel. I'm absolutely gutted by what happened on Sunday. Devastated for my teammates, my coaches, and Ravens fans. I pour every ounce of my being into playing at the highest level possible because I love my team and the game of football. And he went on to kind of apologize.
Poor
I don't think
guy.
He has anything to apologize
no,
for.
No, he doesn't.
Look, it's never one player. It's never the field goal kicker.
No.
It's always the team effort. And he does pour his guts out. Now, on the topic of football, we have a new little preview here of a Bud Light commercial for the Super Bowl, right? You want to set this up, Ethan?
Yeah, so basically, you're watching this commercial. It's a sneak peek to a commercial. Shane Gillis and Post Malone from a Ring camera is what it is.
Oh.
They're walking up to the door, and they're waiting to be let in by some buddies.
All right, here we go.
Is this it? Hello? Come on!
Let us in!
Let us in!
We're here.
Come on! Come on.
Holding a 12-pack of Bud Light.
Okay.
Oh. Your cell phone's going off.
Oh, they're out back.
Oh, they're out back?
Yeah, they're out back.
All right. All right, so look, if you're looking for a campaign to go completely counter toward woke Bud Light, which is what we've experienced, you hire a couple of guys like that, and that might work, right?
It's going... I am super excited for this. These are two of my favorite people out there, celebrity-wise, right now. And they were another thing to add is that they were dressed up like dads, tucked in shirts with the white socks pulled up high. They were wearing... That phone was buzzing on a clip on Shane Gillis's belt, and Post Malone's like trying to widget it out. So I think it's going to be a good one.
One more story before Sue's news. You know, I came back from Las Vegas on Monday, and if you guys have flown to the West Coast, you know that when you, for example, when I fly out to Vegas, it could be like 3 hours, 3 hours, 45 minutes, but you get the jet stream on the way back, right? So it's, even though I took off Monday a little later, it was a 2.5 hour flight. It really isn't bad. So listen to this. According to data from Flight Radar, a plane last night from Las Vegas to Heathrow hit a speed of 814 miles per hour. The subsonic speed record is 835 miles
Holy
per hour.
Wow, that's
this
awesome.
This was a British Airways Boeing 747 catching the tailwind and just getting there. I don't know how long it took.
That's
but
awesome.
My goodness, isn't that crazy?
What's
Wouldn't
the average speed for planes?
I don't know, Fred.
About 600, I think.
Those are the kind of ones, if you ever just catch yourself just staring at the night sky and you see one just flying along and you're like, that's not an airplane. I mean, I bet there was some people probably that saw that were like, holy moly, that thing
is
flying.
Was how fast it was moving,
yeah.
Right? So they say that last year there was a flight from New York to Lisbon that reached 835 miles per hour, about 260 miles per hour faster than the typical top speed. So it being the 650 to 700 range, but that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
My last flight, I was watching, as you were flying, you can watch, you know, the radar of where you're going.
Oh, yeah.
And see how fast you're going.
I love those.
Was way over the fastest, like the average speed. I just stopped watching because I was thinking, uh-oh.
Well,
I love that. I want to get there faster.
That could kind of freak you out, though. That is real fast. All right, let's do this here.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
AI says the average plane speed is 500 to 575. But who knows?
Little AI.
Yeah, the AI knows all, does it? I don't know. This is National Pie Day. All right, I like mine.
I like pies.
Is favorite Fred? What's yours?
Oh, apple pie.
Oh, that's right. Ethan,
peanut butter pie.
Ooh, I like peanut butter pie. That's a new one.
Really?
I could eat that. What about you, Mark?
Well, I don't really discriminate. I'm a pretty big fan of apple, but there's that like. What is that, like French silk or something?
Oh,
like
French
that?
Silk with that nice.
That's pretty good, too.
I like that. I like a blueberry and a homemade whipped cream on a homemade pumpkin pie.
Delicious.
Very difficult to meet.
But I like that.
Okay, on this.
You know, there was one Christmas where my sister, one of my older sisters, and we were all teenagers, and she brought the pumpkin pie up from the basement, the homemade pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
Dropped it on the kitchen floor as soon as she got to the table.
Ooh.
And everyone was like, but we all said, that's okay. It's no big deal.
Five-second rule. How many sisters do you have again?
Three. Three older sisters.
And they're all still around, right?
Yep.
Man, I just feel like we need a segment. Maybe a special edition of the Reardon Roundtable with all three of Fred's sisters and just grill them for the hour. Would that not be amazing?
You get nothing. You get nothing.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They're loyalists to me. They would defend me.
He's the baby.
Oh,
yeah. They're protecting him.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Like a vault.
That's a good idea.
I'm still in. I think that's great. We could work on it.
My last day.
There you go. I'm going to remember that.
All right.
Let's just make that last day happen a little bit more.
Yeah, okay.
Don't rush that, Fred, okay?
Oh, my goodness. This has music, Mark. On this day in history, 49 years ago in 1976, David Bowie released his 10th album, Station to Station, which featured Golden Years. I love this song.
I got a bunch of Bowie songs in the bumps. I don't know if I have this one, though. I was very, very lucky to see David Bowie only one time on the Modern Love Tour. So I was very excited.
How was
about
it?
That.
I assume it was fantastic.
Outstanding. What was the, you know, I saw David Bowie, that would have been 84, 85. No. I think it would have been 87, if I'm not mistaken, because I was living in Chicago for a short stretch. At that point in my life, I had never seen a Broadway stage production, but it was very. You know, very thematic, and it was a rock show. I'd never seen anything like it. I'd seen a bunch of people on stage before. I had never seen that level of performance.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. And then on this day in history, 39 years ago, hometown boy Chuck Berry was in the first group into the Hall of Fame, rock and roll.
Except one person didn't vote for him. Same guy that didn't vote for Ichiro, right?
It was 1986 when he went in.
Deep down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the ever.
Are you doing a little Chuck Berry themed podcast soon, Sue?
Thank you for bringing that up, Mark. I am interviewing Chuck Berry Jr. next week, and we'll have that on History of the Lou with Sue.
That's awesome.
The whole story of Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry Jr. is amazing. He will bring you some awesome energy. He's a lot of fun to talk to.
And thanks to you two for hooking me up with him so I can find him. So thank you for that. Netflix had a stellar final quarter of 2024. They added 19 million subscribers. Holy. I was one. And I went back for a Great British Bake Show. Those numbers were boosted by events like Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson, the Christmas Day NFL games, Squid Game is back, that sort of thing. I know it's a lot. Adding that cheaper ad-supported tier also helped convince users to get back. And I'm one of those. I'm cheap. I did the $6.99. But now it's already going up.
Is it really?
Yep. Sorry about that.
I want to mention, because we have a strong St. Louis connection, it's another person that I'll never probably talk to in my life, and I've known him since he was like 12 years old, Gabriel Basso. Gabe Basso is an actor originally from St. Louis. He lives in South Carolina now. But season 2 of The Night Agent is debuting on Netflix. I think it's on there right now. That season 1 was great. It actually kind of broke Gabe. He's been in a lot of different movies. He was in a TV show with Laura Linney many years ago called The Big C that was on Showtime, and he's really, really broken out. He took about 4 years off from acting. He just dropped out of Hollywood, but he came back with The Night Agent. He was also in Juror Number 2 that was on recently, and I'm hearing great things about season 2 of The Night Agent. It is on Netflix right now. Gabe Basso, St. Louis guy.
Oh, that's cool. Netflix is going up from $6.99 to $7.99 with ads. The standard will now be $17 and the premium will be $24.99.
The logic behind that makes perfect sense, right? Like, all right, we just had our most successful quarter ever, so what are we going to do? We just made a bunch of money. We're going to make more now.
Maybe they needed that money to pay off Cameron Diaz for bringing her back.
Maybe.
The $45 million or whatever
but
it was.
There really is not a day that goes by. Like, I was just looking through my email here because I got one today saying that my Discovery Plus, you know, subscription went up. In other news, I didn't know I had a Discovery Plus membership, but apparently it's just gone up. I mean, it is kind of sometimes hard to figure out.
Didn't Netflix, like, last year change some of its rules so you couldn't have as many people watching on your
sharing.
Account. So that's probably how they got a lot of viewers as well.
That's a good point. Speaking of movies, this is the 36th anniversary of When Harry Met Sally. I know. Not really one of those milestone anniversaries, but what?
That's
seems crazy. I love it. Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal both posed in a photo for the two of them sitting on a couch together wearing clothing similar to their outfits in the movie. And Meg said, quote, "It's finally happening. We're reuniting for something iconic. Can't wait to see you all soon."
Ooh,
so we'll see if that happens.
You want to talk about, like, if you were to ask me the question, and I know you weren't, but I'm going to ask myself the question. What was, like, maybe one of the biggest celebrity crushes you ever had in your life? It would be Meg Ryan. And it was Meg Ryan on General Hospital.
I think that's legit.
Yeah. I told Dennis Quaid that one time when I was on a tour bus with him, and he took kindly to that when they were married many years ago. But I loved Meg Ryan. And she's sort of not done anything, right?
Well, she's done several movies since then, but
in the more modern era, in the last 10 years. And I think she even got back together with Mellencamp, didn't she?
Well, and then they broke up again.
Did they?
Yeah. I feel that way about Dennis Quaid, so we can talk about that.
How old were you from your first crush?
The first crush was probably when I was 10 years old, but I'm just saying, if you're going to the Crush Hall of Fame, Fred. This was not a first crush. This was in my 20s.
Crush Hall of Fame, Fred.
The Crush Hall of Fame would include Meg Ryan. And Marissa Tomei I'd throw into that group, too.
My first crush.
Both on General Hospital, by the way.
Oh, good grief.
My first real crush was in 1972. It was Olympic skater Janet Lynn.
Janet Lynn?
Yeah, she was like from Northbrook, Illinois, and I would like...
I remember her
Newsweek magazine cover photo.
That's
wow. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Wait, who is it again? Janet?
Janet Lynn.
Janet Lynn. L-Y-N-N?
Yeah.
Oh, American figure skater. Oh, that's what started your love of the figure skating.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah. That's understandable.
Ethan, who was your first crush since it happened in the last 5 years, probably?
Yeah, basically. It was probably like Miranda Cosgrove or someone.
Yeah, that would make sense.
She's got the cute dimples.
Victoria Justice. Like some of those Nickelodeon shows.
My kids watched all those.
Or Ariana Grande, I had a big crush on her.
How old are you?
She needs a cheeseburger.
Yeah, so my son Aiden is about to be, how old is he going to be? He's 25. He's about to be 25. So they're the same. We watched all those shows when they were younger.
Selena Gomez would be just around in your
range. Yep, she's on that list as well. She's on the crush list as well. Yep. Speaking of Billy Crystal, he was just in St. Louis not that long ago for the Stan Musial Awards.
Oh, yeah, he did the Stan Musial Awards.
Oh, that's neat. That's neat. A California couple has filed a lawsuit against JetBlue Airlines after a block of ice from one of the company's planes came crashing through their bedroom ceiling. Michael Reese and Leah, they said they were sound asleep on January 1st when a chunk of ice about the size of a watermelon broke through the ceiling right over their bed, and they barely escaped devastating physical injury, according to them. They're asking for $1 million, and an investigation by the FAA found the same plane dropped a chunk of ice on Massachusetts, a house in Massachusetts, in August of 2023. Now, in the current lawsuit, they say JetBlue failed to, quote, investigate and correct the problems after the 2023 incident. And JetBlue has not commented.
And was this just a block of ice?
Yes. I looked it up.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So it was, they have figured out, because Fred's story said it was waste. But it was waste water. It was potable water. But it was the waste water that got in. Because I saw that too, Fred, and I freaked out.
Maybe they'll end up Venmoing it back to them.
There you go.
Wasn't that yesterday we talked about that?
Yeah.
But can you just, for a moment, recapture the phrase was awesome about them being injured. What was it? They avoided what?
I got to go back.
Barely escaped devastating
physical injury.
Couldn't you just say death? Like, we almost got killed.
And it woke you up from a dead sleep to get scary.
I think I would sue as well, though.
Yeah, I would too. Would. And finally, in Sue's news, we have today's random fact. Oh, this is okay. It's illegal to own a pet hamster in Hawaii. The climate is too good for hamsters, so if a few ever escaped, they could start wild colonies that would devastate Hawaii's native crops. Take that.
I understand.
Rewind it back.
That makes sense.
That is phenomenal.
No hamsters, people. And that's it for Sue's News.
I'm going to call an audible here just because I wanted to get this in before Sue's News. I think you'll both like this because one of the things that happened here this afternoon is Trump has released the JFK files and the Martin Luther King files.
Are you serious?
I am serious. Listen.
Lastly, sir, we have an executive order ordering the classification of files relating to the assassinations of President John F. Kennedy, Senator Robert F. Kennedy, and Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
That's a big one, huh?
Yeah, it is.
A lot of people are waiting for this for
He promised to
years.
Do it.
For decades. And everything will be revealed.
Wow.
Okay? Give that to RFK Jr.
Did you hear what he said at the end? He said, give that to RFK Jr.
The pen,
because he signed that executive order. That could be fascinating moving forward.
One of our dear departed friends from Hot Air was big into the JFK investigation.
Oh, yeah. Jess Shaw.
Yeah,
we lost
right?
him last year for sure. We have Carl Cannon coming up talking politics and Real Clear Politics next.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We got Carl Cannon coming up here. I need to address some soap opera misinformation because as we were recounting our celebrity crushes, I mentioned Marissa Tomei and Meg Ryan, and I said they were both on General Hospital. That is not true. And I recognized that very soon after the fact. Meg Ryan was on General Hospital, and Marissa Tomei was on As the World Turns. See, I watched both of those in the early 80s as I was addicted to soap operas. I arranged my classes at Mizzou around my soap operas. I'm not embarrassed to say that because we all kind of did that. Fred, you did it too,
right?
I did
too. I arranged it around Days of Our Lives.
Oh my
and then
God,
once I got out, Young and the Restless.
Thank you, Fred. And then Sue, you remembered that you had a celebrity crush, right?
Well, mine was Sean Cassidy at first because he was a Hardy Boy and had that beautiful feathered hair.
Yes.
And then I moved on to Rick Springfield, who was also
feathered
in the
hair.
Soap operas.
But you also liked feathered hair.
It was the feathered hair. It was the time.
Rick Springfield, General Hospital.
Yes.
I want to get all this straight. That's very, very important.
He looked good.
435. Unfortunately, there's still some fires raging in the Los Angeles area. We had a few new ones. One that was really bad in Ventura County near Oxnard, California. And hopefully they got some control of that. But we'll find out with our friend Brian Ping. We're going to get back into the birthright issue of constitutionality with the 14th Amendment with Ilya Shapiro in the next hour. And then don't forget, we have a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. A lot of issues, including state control of St. Louis's Police Department, all the inauguration festival. We almost need 2 hours tomorrow for the roundtable. A lot of topics, and then all the regular stuff on a Friday as well. Carl Cannon back with us this afternoon, Washington Bureau Chief for Real Clear Politics. Mr. Carl Cannon, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. How you been?
I've been pretty good, you know, kind of seeing what's unfolding in our nation's capital and beyond, right? It's kind of interesting. We have a new governor here in Missouri as well.
It's drinking from a fire hose here in Washington. I think Donald Trump held more press conferences in his first 3 days in office than Biden and Kamala Harris did in the past year combined.
I don't think that's an exaggeration. I made that, you know, comment yesterday as well. He's certainly not afraid of, you know, facing the media and answering some questions. Then he was addressing the crew, you know, in Davos remotely this morning with some strong economic messages. I mentioned the, you know, the cabinet appointments are starting to get voted on. So I don't know if you have any inside information on what might succeed and what might not. John Ratcliffe, I guess, approved for the CIA director today. Anything else that you're hearing, Carl? What about Pete Hegseth?
Well, Hegseth, it's not that the starch has gone out of the Democrats exactly, but Hegseth did such a good job, and some of those his critics on that Senate, you know, Armed Forces Committee seems so unhinged that I think my guess is that Chuck Schumer doesn't confide in me, Mark. He'd probably be better off if he did.
Yes.
But my guess is that they're really looking at is Tulsi Gabbard, and the other is Bobby Kennedy Jr.
Yeah.
So that'd be my guess, is that's where the next real big fight is going to be. And there's some problem in each case with the paperwork. In Kennedy's case, I think that might be financial disclosure stuff. His family finances are very complex. And I don't know what the holdup on Tulsi Gabbard is, but I know that the Democrats, you haven't heard the last of them.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that have happened this week. And I know you've written about this. I have to start with Elon Musk. People are still talking about the so-called Nazi salute. One of the questions I asked yesterday is, let's just for a moment assume that that's what he was doing, right? He intentionally did the Nazi salute. To what end? I mean, he's a guy that's been helping Jewish hostages. Is he offering any other behavior that is, you know, white supremacist, if you will, Carl? It's baffling the way, I guess I'm not surprised the way the media's handled this, but good Lord.
I thought it was disquieting. It was disturbing. This Hitler thing that they used it against Trump. Look, they used it against George W. Bush. I mean, you know, they've been using this for years. It really backfired this year. People got it made voters angry. It made them distrust the Democrats. Independent voters who I'm talking about, they had their mind made up about Trump. And what most Americans thought was that I think a working majority of independent voters thought was that Trump was a pretty good president, and the Democrats didn't really want to let him be president, and Biden had fallen short, and they were willing to give him a second look, and that they knew who he was, and they knew his faults, they knew his virtues, they didn't like those mean tweets and stuff. But when they called him Hitler over and over again, I think it undermined their whole regime. I think they thought, why should I know that's not true, and I know that they know it's not true, so why should I trust them on anything?
Well,
and yet, that hasn't gone away. Now that Elon Musk, you know, I can't. It's just a stupid thing to do, and counterproductive, and really kind of obscene. You're talking about Adolf Hitler here.
That
just shouldn't even be part of our conversation, right?
It shouldn't be. I've always avoided the Nazi Hitler stuff. I don't like it. Look, even the the Anti-Defamation League came to his, you know, defense. And I guess what you could say is it's the usual sources. It's AOC. It's Jerry Nadler. It's some of the, you know, the nut jobs in the Senate. They're going to repeat this. And look, this is TDS. I don't think there's anything more you can say. It's Trump derangement syndrome. And I think a lot of the American people who voted for Trump, they've tuned out, right? They're not listening to this stuff.
Well, AOC doubled down. She attacked the Anti-Defamation League. So I don't have to. I mean, she's not even a person you can take serious anymore. She thinks she cares. This is a woman who, by the way, refused to condemn Hamas, who went to these demonstrations. She now cares more about anti-Semitism than the Anti-Defamation League. That's like an old joke. You know, you're more Catholic than the Pope.
Right.
So you had the ADL and Bibi Netanyahu both said this was not an Nazi salute, and Elon Musk is not an anti-Semite. That should be the end of the conversation.
Well, to a certain extent, I think that in a lot of the real world, it was. I mean, certainly not on CNN, et cetera. And then there's, you know, let me get your take your temperature here on J6 and the pardons. On the one hand, I have troubles with a lot of what Biden did. In particular, I think he pardoned an FBI killer. But I wasn't crazy about all the J6 pardons. And I don't know if the promises were kept to not, you know, make sure that those who participated in violence that day were kept behind bars. Now, on the other hand, Carl, I've looked at some of these sentences, and I've looked at sentences here in St. Louis of violent offenders who aren't even close to, you know, 4, 5, 10, 15, 20-year sentences. So I do have mixed feelings on that.
Well, I'll mention two things about it, Mark, and I agree with you, but I have mixed feelings, too. But in this case, it was quite clear that the Justice Department had been weaponized against these defendants. And there were, Julie Kelly wrote about it for Real Clear Investigations. There, you had these cases where people wandering through the Capitol for 8 minutes who didn't hurt anybody are given 2 years in prison. And the judges, you know, routinely accepted every motion by the government, denied every motion by the defense, allowed them to play 22 minutes of videotape of the riot at the Capitol for all these defendants who had nothing to do with it. If you went to trial, if you dared to go to trial, the government punished you. These judges used an Enron statute about shredding documents to load up the case. They overcharged these people. It was pretty grotesque. And they gave these lengthy prison, you know, 20 years in prison to these Oath Keeper and Proud Boys guys who weren't even there that day. And so on the one hand, I think Trump is convinced that it was manifest injustice. And I cannot say that that's wrong.
I know.
There were some.
Okay, yeah, that's the tough part. Yeah.
But here's the other side of it. So as recently as last week, J.D. Vance said, well, we're not going to pardon people who were violent towards the police. But they didn't stick with that. Well, what happened in the meantime? Well, Joe Biden pardoned 2,500 drug dealers, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, they said they were not, was it 2,515? I can't remember. It was more than 1,000. They said they were nonviolent. Well, they didn't go through those case by case any more than Trump did. They just looked at the charges, and often these charges are dropped down. Often these are violent people. And Mark, maybe this is personal with me, and I shouldn't even talk about it, but my nephew, you know, was killed by a heroin dealer. You know, he was so, you know, and he died of a drug overdose. And that guy was never even prosecuted. You know, we've sort of lost the plot on this. But are drug dealers who are dealing fentanyl to teenagers, is that much better than guys who slug the policemen? I submit to you, no.
Yeah. Well, look, we've got a situation here in St. Louis. Luckily, it's correcting itself. We had this terrible, you're probably familiar with some of it, Kim Gardner, a former prosecutor. There were literally thousands of felony cases that she just chose not to, you know, prosecute. And these are some of those violent felonies. So, you know, we've had a situation in St. Louis where a lot of people have gone unpunished, and that has been replicated. We know that in L.A. and Chicago and some of these other big cities as well. Carl Cannon is here from Real Clear Politics. Let's talk about journalism. You wrote about journalism, you admitted, and we've talked about this before. You said you're worried about the state of journalism in our country. Let me share a quick story with you and get your opinion here, because about 2 months ago, maybe 6-7 weeks ago, it was before Christmas, I had a listener that reached out, Carl, and said, hey, and I went to the University of Missouri. I graduated in 1986 from the J School. I was there in Columbia for many years. I had relationships with my alma mater for a long time. Those have kind of vanished because of politics. But anyway, guy reaches out. He says, I've got this amazing audio from the day after the election from a journalism class at the University of Missouri. And the father and the son want you to hear this. They're okay with you using it. So I listened to it. You know, the first 2 minutes, it's the professor, it's a documentary filmmaking course, says, you know, something like capitalism is idiotic, you know, and then he goes on and it's this big rant. So I listened to it and I was about to play it. The father kind of freaked out and he prevented me. He asked me not to play it. So I cooperated. But in the meantime, I had reached out to the dean of the journalism school at the University of Missouri, David Kerpius. Mm-hmm. I didn't know him. And I said, hey, in you know, fairness to my alma mater, I think you should be aware that I may talk about this. He reached out to me. He was putting out a fire, Carl. So he was doing his job. I appreciate that. But we had a conversation about something that you mentioned in your column. And that is, we always hear about diversity, right? But we talked about viewpoint diversity, and the dean was relatively open to say that that's something that he feels is important. I'm going to follow up with him here in a couple of weeks. He's invited me to come to the J School and visit, and I want to hold his feet to the fire on that. But that's so important, and it's something we don't have right now, viewpoint diversity.
Well, and that, look, that's right. And we wonder, you know, we wonder when Hamas invades Israel and commits, you know, all these hideous war crimes. And then these people come and they demonstrate, these kids, and we're shocked. Not that they're demonstrating, that they're demonstrating on the wrong side.
Yeah.
You think, okay, where did that happen? Well, who taught them that? Well, we know who taught them that. They're teachers, they're high school teachers and they're college teachers. That's who taught them that. And, you know, it's time to get a handle on this. And to have these tenured professors who claim to, you know, who aren't out in the real world, who claim to be socialists, who take the tax, you know, taxpayers' dollars, right?
Well, that's right.
I mean, it's the, you know, the jokes write themselves. I just think that, you know, this point that you've made, diversity, you know, viewpoint diversity, it's what we need in colleges, in these faculty lounges, it's what we need in newsrooms. And if we get that, a lot of these, you know, this pendulum starts to swing back towards the middle where it belongs.
Well, and, you know, I would even say, I use this as an example, and this is where I kind of struggle, you know, as a talk show host, because I am interested in the other opinions. I read a lot of other opinions. But, you know, in the situation here with the pardons. Let me use that as an example, because I get curious. I listened to CNN on Tuesday on my way home, and all they were talking about was, you know, J6, right? And even last night, same thing, J6. So they act like there's no Biden pardons whatsoever. Over on Fox, to a certain extent, they act like there's no J6 pardons, right? So you don't have, and this is where with the main networks in particular, I struggle, because where can you get, you know, maybe that kind of journalism is gone, Carl, but can you get information that is at least accurate? I don't know.
Well, this is a problem. And part of the problem is economic. You know, the business model of journalism when you and I were young, markets, it.
Oh, yeah. Very different.
And, you know, we had all these reporters. We go out and we just get the story. We let the chips fall so they may. And now they don't have enough reporters to even gather the news. And they found out that, you know, CNN found out it's a lot cheaper just to hire people to sit around and pontificate than go cover, you know, cover wars, cover foreign capitals, staff bureaus, get the news. Gathering news is expensive. And part of the big problem here, we haven't quite come up with a business model yet that works.
Yeah. Well, we're in a challenging period, but in the meantime, we do have Real Clear Politics, and you know how much of a fan I am of that. Carl Cannon, always great to have you on. We're not going to have any trouble in the coming months, years, filling columns and filling airtime, will we?
No, sir. You call me anytime.
All right, take care, Carl. We'll see you.
All right.
Well, there's some interesting reporting right now in Politico. Take it for what it's worth, but this is really not unexpected. One of the stories from yesterday was, and I don't think I covered it that much, but, you know, Trump on Tuesday had this big rollout of the $500 billion investment into artificial intelligence. Well, Elon just totally threw cold water on that yesterday, saying those guys, they don't have the money to invest. So now the story is enough money, I think is his point. White House officials said Musk very much got over his skis when the tech tycoon launched a day-long screed against the AI project. One Trump ally said Musk abused his closeness to the president. So this is already off to a rocky start. Another Republican said Trump staff is furious over Musk using his massive social media platform to pour cold water on the infrastructure deal that Trump called tremendous and monumental. And I love this quote. Now, this is anonymous, but you can kind of see where this might be accurate. The Trump ally said, it's clear. He's talking about Musk. It's clear he has abused the proximity to the president. The problem is the president doesn't have any leverage over him, and Elon gives zero Fs, which you can kind of see. And then, you know, these guys, they're so in their own world and on a unique place on the planet because they're so wealthy. Like, Elon doesn't like Sam Altman, the St. Louis guy, so there's all these complications with that as well. So I don't know where this is going to take us. I do know that we apparently don't have Vivek involved in Doge. And is anyone going to be running Doge? They have some cool things that are happening on the web. I don't know if you heard about the Spanish language site. They shut that down. They're saying it's going to return, but they're changing it. A lot of the DEI stuff on the White House website, all of that is being changed. They have a Doge-like countdown clock, or at least it's showing how much money can potentially be saved, and they run it alongside the debt clock. So I'm excited about Doge, but I also think that the two people who were kind of appointed to the whole Doge project are maybe not going to be involved anymore, so I'm not sure where that's going to take us. We'll talk with Ilya Shapiro after the top of the hour. He's our constitutional law expert, of course, director of constitutional studies at the Manhattan Institute. A federal judge today in Seattle temporarily blocked the executive order on birthright citizenship. That's going to, well, first of all, that was not unexpected. It's going to go to the Supremes. How quickly, how will this be handled? And I don't think, and I've had a few listeners ask me about this today, I certainly am very interested in removing the birthright citizenship aspect, but there's, you know, maybe going to have to be a constitutional amendment. Look, the whole thing was based on what happened with slavery, people who were brought to this country and became slaves, tortured. They didn't have the right to citizenship. The 14th Amendment corrected that. It did not, the intention was not, now this gets tricky constitutionally too, but the intention was not to give anyone who would cross the border, millions of people illegally who might get pregnant or then become pregnant and they have a baby and then they're automatically a citizen of this country. That's the way it's set up though right now. And birthright citizenship is spelled out in the Constitution. So it might take a constitutional amendment, but Ilya is going to break that all down. Brian Ping at 525, the latest on the fires in Los Angeles, plus an audio cut of the day.
Get more at 971talk.com.